Charles Morris joins the show now. Welcome, Charles.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're talking because you are part of the Flashcard Project exhibition at Carbondale Arts. Let's start with the flashcard that we were sent you to work from. Could you describe that for us?
Yeah, it's the classic Jack in the Box. Little guy popping out of the box looks like he's seen all sorts of stuff that he wished he hadn't. It's classic. It's got the little triangles on the box. And, the guy kind of looks creepy. Well, not kind of. He does look creepy.
He's
got those weird little hands. And that's the Jack in the Box.
You know who it reminded me of was Chucky, just a little bit.
You know, that's a perfect, that's right on, because the Chuck E. Cheese or the Chucky, whoever that guy was,
Which
was also extremely creepy. But I was excited to get it. And
why were you excited?
Well, I was excited to get it because I was in a place that when I looked around, there was just so many things that have showed up in the last 6 months with everything that's going on the planet Earth right now in terms of the shift in our lifestyles for the pandemic, and then the focus on the race. And because I see all those things as a beckoning for a shift in cultures, I could easily say that I could relate to the little guy coming out of the box. And in the same breath, I think that we have the most amazing opportunities of our millennium right before us right now also. So although it's a bit of a frightening look at things, I think on the deeper side of it, it's a beckoning for all of us to make this a very different situation.
Well, after all, the Jack popping out of the box has a smile on his face, so I guess that is sort of a hopeful thing.
when you get the creepy look, you're certainly hoping at some place in that creepy look there's a positive experience, and I think there is.
So you took that Jack in the Box figure and you put it in the center of your clipboard. What did you do with the rest of the piece?
Well, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then it sort of hit me that if I just played along with the Jack in the Box theme, that maybe in order to facilitate the shift that I'm describing, that we ought to think out of the box. And so thinking out of the box, I started paging through different magazines and picking up a word here or a phrase here and came up with a group of ideas that I think are helpful when we want to think out of the box. And I think in order to really shift the culture, that we need to honestly think completely out of the box. When you try to solve a problem, I think if you try to solve that problem with the same component parts that the problem was originally made up of, you end up with a version of the problem. So hence the idea of really thinking out of the box.
You know, that metaphor of thinking out of the box didn't occur to me. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because now it makes sense. Now it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, if you look at the clipboard, about two-thirds of the way down, there's this really disjointed group of words that actually wonder whether we can think out of the box. But you got to follow it. I did a pretty good job of disguising it.
Oh, I'm going to have to look at it again. I'm looking at it actually right now as we speak on the website, on the Carbondale Arts website. But I can't zoom in enough to read those words, so I guess I'm going to have to go back and look at it. So you took these various inspirational sayings, things that mean a lot to you, and you sort of put them collage style surrounding the Jack in the Box. Is that basically?
Yeah, and I purposely tried to break them up, so you really need to spend a little bit of time trying to piece them together.
Yeah.
The good news is, in the breakup category, is all of them had a color scheme to them, or most of them did. So if you had one word, like there's in the word intrigue, is at the top of the clipboard, and it's broken up into two different chunks. But if you spend a moment or two, you can put it together, and yeah. So we got the concept of danger and risk and stuff that I believe that is commensurate with making big adjustments.
One of the statements that jumped out at me was outshining the shadows. I loved that.
Yeah, that's right out of. We talked about that in our previous discussion. That's right out of the men's groups and the King, Warrior, Magician, Lovers, and the conversations about who we are and then what our shadows are all about, and how if we're not careful, those shadows actually rule the way we behave. And so, yeah, when I saw that, outshining the shadows, that was pretty cool. I love that.
So this men's group ethic or dynamic actually informs a lot of this piece, and as well as a lot of what you do in your life. Maybe you could share with us what that entails.
Well, I got involved with the Art Saves Lives, and we were Cohane. When we did some grief presentations, and when the scholarship for Art Saves Lives came up, I applied so that I could fund a film called The Mask You Live In, which is about the challenges boys and young men in today's culture have if they try to navigate America's narrow definition of masculinity. And so I was fortunate enough to be one of the recipients of that scholarship and use the money to secure licensing for 8 different community libraries from Aspen to Parachute. And so we had a pretty great tour for that film. And then the virus hit, and so we finally did a Zoom presentation for the 6th Garfield Library, and then Aspen and Basalt are on hold, hoping we can have an in-person kind of a situation there. And so, yeah, that's a big theme in my life right now, because the film does a really fabulous job of describing how challenging it is to find a group of support for group support for young boys, boys and young men. And so that fits right into the cultural shift, because when you look at the film, even though it is clear that it's a boys' crisis, it's really clear that it's a cultural crisis.
It strikes me, listening to you describe that, Charles, that that's probably a big part of the extreme futility that Black people in this country feel and why they're protesting, because they don't know how to be a man.
It's an endangered species, without a doubt. And I'm not laughing at that because it's funny, because it's tragic.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point. And that point that you make goes back, oh gosh, at least 70, 80, 90 years back towards the Industrial Revolution, where those communities that were so entrenched in the cities, they were the boroughs, in the the small towns. They were just that. They were small towns. And somehow along the way, we got separated from the idea of what was really appropriate behavior to become a mature man. And no fault of the boys and the young men and the generations, because the curriculum, so to speak, was basically just X'd out of the culture. But that does not mean that it cannot be replaced and revitalized. And that's really what the whole idea is to remind everybody that it isn't a lost art. It's just something that needs to be resurrected.
And that resurrection is not a new idea. It's been around for a little while. I'm thinking of the work of people like Robert Bly and Michael Mead, James Hillman.
Yeah, those were the heavyweights. Joseph Campbell's right at the top of that list also.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's exactly right. Those guys recognized the gap that had occurred. And even though there was a lot of folks that paid attention to that, there was a really, really tremendous support group, men's groups all around the United States. But it seemed like the other side of that was overtaking the information that those guys that you mentioned were bringing forward, and if you look at the time frame for that, which was the 80s and the early 90s, I think the culture said, well, you know, how bad could it really be if we didn't pay attention to this, or, you know, how bad could it really get? And then when you look at the evidence that's offered in The Mask You Live In, which was produced in 2015, they offer, meaning psychologists, neuroscience, sociologists, coaches, media, educators, everybody got together and put together quantifiable statistics and showed that the answer to that question back in the 90s, which was, well, how bad could it really get, was that this is how bad it really got, and it really got a lot worse. So obviously, when you don't pay attention to the problem and you plug it into 25 or 30 years, you end up with a scenario that's much worse than it was a long time ago.
Yeah, you end up with cops' knees on people's necks.
That's exactly right. this is not a really complex. It's complicated in that there's a lot of things involved, but it's simple. And I think those guys that you described, the Campbells, the Robert Bly, the Hillman, and Michael Mead, and there's a whole bunch of other ones. Those folks were talking about good behavior and humanity.
Yeah.
And I think that we could probably sift it down to humanity and really get a lot of traction just from that concept, that central theme alone. Why in the world, in a really humane world, why would you put your knee on someone's neck unless you really had to? And obviously all the examples that we are being shown, there were alternate circumstances that could have occurred. So, yeah, it's a really sad expose on boy-like behavior in the hands of a powerful person.
So, how did we come to this terrible pass? Is it because none of us as young men were initiated into manhood? Is it as simple as that?
I think it's a little more complicated than that, although those are elements of all the cultures. I mean, if we had a ton of time, I could take you back 6,000 years and we could highlight a variety of cultures. All of those cultures when things were about mythology, all had those initiations. But the initiation is a beginning, and the beginning spans about a 10 to 12 year period. And traditionally, those initiations and those rites of passage started when the boy was about 13 years old. Now, with the advancement in societies, probably that initiation wants to start about 10 or 11. But the gap that you're talking about, I believe, was where there was a person that was maybe 10 or 15 years older than the initiate. There was a family and a community that talked about these kinds of things, and the things that they would talk about would be what kind of behavior really helped a family and really was generative to a community. And so there was a curriculum, if you will, where a father and an uncle and a mentor, that person that might have been 10 to 15 years older, and then the elders who said, well, you know, when we were kids, you know, we didn't do it exactly the same way, but there was a goal, and the goal was to be generative, and that's family and community oriented. And around the Industrial Revolution, when as a society we began to really separate all of those boroughs, those little communities, as we just sort of exploded into jet airplanes and suburbs, all of those little family cliques just came apart. And nobody sat around and thought for very long about, well, what's the downside for this? I think we were so excited about the idea that we didn't have to drive around in a horse and buggy anymore, that you had a car, that you could, you know, make all these wonderful new things that were beneficial to us. We lost our way in terms of understanding of the incredible inherent benefits of that tight-knit family in the community. And then, to your point, all those initiations and all of those rituals just sort of dissolved and went away.
It unraveled the fabric of families and communities.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's the answer? How do we fight back against that?
Well, I think, as I mentioned a little while ago, sometimes it takes a aha moment to recognize that, yikes, you know, we have all these wonderful new things, but we lost one thing that we had that was wonderful also. And I'm not suggesting that we try to emulate the way we acted and lived 60, 70, or even 6 or 7 years ago. But there is value that I believe can be perceived when we look at what we're missing. And so rather than try to say to a young man today that they should be sitting on the top of a hill doing a vision quest, you know, like maybe the Sioux Indian did, you know, that might be inappropriate for where we're all at. But at the same time, the idea of that vision quest was to actually discover who we were. And I think discovering who we really are at the deepest level is still going to be really valuable to anybody that's trying to become a mature adult, male or female, in today's world.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm glad you said male or female, because I was thinking this, it works for both genders, process.
It can't work for either one unless it works for both.
Yeah.
That would be commonly described as the sacred marriage. And it's a really interesting statistic in the mask you live in, where one of the therapists superimposed the graph, which were results of questions that were asked young men and young women. And the similarities, maybe 85 to 90% identical to the male and the female, with the two ends of the bell curve, maybe 5 or 6% on each end, as different. So, you know, great point that you just made in that we're a lot more similar than we might like to believe. And in order to really get that generative, that element of being a generative person in the community is essential to understand that there needs to be a sacred marriage between the male and the female.
You know, it's a piece of art that brought us together talking about these incredibly interesting and important topics. I wonder if the idea of a creative process can expedite these kinds of things, these kinds of transformations in a person. I wonder if creativity might be one of the tools we can use to get us out of this.
Oh, I think that absolutely yes is what I'm saying to that. If you were to look at the archetypal energies that all of those guys that you were describing base most of their thoughts about the benefits of the way it used to be done, and the benefits of what would happen if we resurrected these kinds of ideas. One of the most essential elements of it is the aspect of creativity and art. You know, the art of creating a wonderful family situation, the art of creating a community, the art of wondering what real development in a community look like. Does it look like just a lot of buildings, or does it look like some open space where we have nature and the actual generative development of a space? And so all of that comes under the umbrella of creation. And of course, that, you know, the main that's the essence of art. So yeah, good point. Art might be the most essential element of this kind of a transformation.
You mentioned earlier, Charles, the idea of an aha moment. Do you think the pandemic has inspired those moments on a wide in a widespread way?
Oh, I absolutely do. And as bizarre as I think it is, without a doubt, it really imposed free time and reflective time on everybody, whether you liked it or not.
Huh.
And so I think universally it was particularly unique that the aha moment of Black Lives Matter and the concept of racism, which is just a monster, happened when there was a period of time where literally millions and millions of people all over the world had a chance to pay attention to it and to feel it and to respond to it. So, yeah, the pandemic has certainly created a unique environment for all of us to take a moment and just look around.
You know, I completely agree, but I wonder if we can sustain that feeling. I guess I'm saying, is this tragedy, I don't know if tragedy is the right word, is this a big enough thing to where everything's going to change like we all seem to want? Or is this just another step in the unfolding of the answer?
Well, I think that we all are probably wondering exactly that.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to recognize it, and that's the first thing that has to happen. I mean, let's face it,
yeah.
If you can't see it, or if you can't imagine it, or if you're not aware of it, well, then, you know, it's going to be hard to really wonder what you might be able to do to participate. I think the idea of that sacred marriage, going back to that just briefly, is essential, because we're going to be separate if we don't figure that out. So, you know, separation is just that, separation. So the sacred marriage, understanding that, and then understanding that a cultural shift only occurs when every single person in the culture makes some sort of an adjustment. So it isn't like we go out and try to wave a magic wand and go, okay, we need 30 million people to, you know, change the way they think about stuff today. It's more about everybody in that group answering the question that you and I are talking about right now, which is, what can I really do to dive deep into the way I behave and the way I look at things? And what can I do to help my family and my community? And then if everybody decides that they're, or not everybody, but if a lot of people decide they're up for that, then the other thing that comes up that I believe is essential to the answer to your question, and it's, you know, making an adjustment to one thing, then there's maintaining that adjustment. And maintaining it is a tall, tall, tall order. And we can look back over time and see the push-pull between politics and we could use racism as an example of how, for, you know, okay, allegedly one day there wasn't going to be any more, and really look around and it's everywhere you look. So it's really going to require people having the patience to dig deep and recognizing that to get to that change that I think that you're alluding to isn't going to be in a year or two or three. We can start this afternoon. We can start yesterday. But this is a long haul, and it will require really, really great organization to be able to accomplish it.
On a very personal level, Charles, these issues, I'm wondering how these issues impact the way you live your own life.
Well, I've got a son and a grandson and a community that I adore and people that are just so inspirational. And ever since we started this stuff about a year ago, you know, on the grassroots level, which of course does focus on individual change, I've just been inspired on a daily basis by all the people and just the amazing amount of people that really, really are up for this. And so I would say that it's the central part of my life, because it's what will make my impact and my contribution to the community and to my family the one that hopefully will be best serving to them. And so I can't really serve them unless I'm doing something that is actually going to be of service to them. So it really kind of narrows itself down pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's about family, and then it's about community.
Yeah.
And so here in the bubble, have we been seduced so completely by the great pleasures that we all find here that none of this applies?
I would say the seduction thing is pretty rampant.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, it's tricky business.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's no reason, you know, to not enjoy all of the wonderful stuff that that's in the bubble, and in the same breath, because it is a little bubble-esque, I think the onus is on all of us to, you know, take that deep breath once in a great while and go, hey, wait a minute, you know, just kind of shake our, you know, shake my head and think, okay, now this isn't Chicago. this is Carbondale. We're in the Rockies here. And does that mean that that's the way it is everywhere? And the answer is obviously no.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Wow. Charles, I could talk for hours about this stuff, but sadly we have to go. We've got 31 minutes on the meter here, and it's been fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with all of us.
Well, that's my pleasure, and I'm so happy to be part of Art Saves Lives, because it does, and I'm so excited to be just in the general vicinity of Carbondale Arts and the launch pad and all of the incredible inspiration that just comes out of everything that they do. And so bravo, the Carbondale Arts and Art Saves Lives and the incredible Carbondale community. And thank you so much for taking the time to yak with me.
You're so welcome. Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks, Luke. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.